So one of my favorite views in all of the Hawaiian Islands is the view of Mauna Loa from behind Namakani Paio campground. Now, Mauna Loa can be seen from almost anywhere on Hawaii Island, and I think I like that view from behind the Namakani Paio campground because I've camped there so many times, and my daughter Naya, who has been there with me a number of times, can tell you that I cannot even set up a tent without first taking everybody through the eucalyptus trees that are there to the point where you can look out and view Mauna Loa. It is an amazing mountain. Mauna Loa is the largest shield volcano in the world. Not only is it the largest shield volcano, but it is the largest single individual mountain mass in the entire world. Goes down 20,000 more feet underneath the surface of the sea than the almost 14,000 feet that we can see there. It's an amazing and beautiful place. And when you look at it in the morning, sometimes it is utterly crystal clear. By the afternoon, the mists have begun to come in, the clouds will begin to cover the mountain. In the evenings, if you're lucky enough, you may be there during a full moon, and the full moon illuminates that entire mountain. Or if it's a night without a moon, you see stars like you cannot even imagine. It's an amazing place. It is designated as a wilderness in our world today, and which is really an interesting word. And you heard me talking with the young people about the word wilderness as it's found in the Bible. When I think of wilderness, for the most part, I think lush, green. I think walking through forests. I think of soaring landscapes with big, tall mountain peaks, rushing waters over rivers or crashing into shorelines. But this is a wilderness very akin to the biblical wilderness. Desolate. Very, very quiet. It's an amazing place. And if you have the privilege not only to view it, but to actually hike up it, to backpack up it, to climb Mauna Loa, the uniqueness of this place becomes even more pronounced. At about 8,500 feet, you pass the last tree. It sits there all by itself, saying, "Hi, it's me. I'm the last one here." After that, it's just shrubs and scrub until you get to a point somewhere around 11 or 12,000 feet where you see nothing living. You walk across one lava flow after another that's crisscrossing. You walk next to fissures in which the colors of those fissures remind you, they're deep reds, of the magma that is right below the surface, maybe thousands of feet, but it's right there. And it's come up right through those fissures before. Cinder cones that were created by the blast of that volcano. It is an amazing place to walk upon, but the thing that always amazes me the most is it is so silent. It is so quiet up there, it is almost deafening how quiet it is. And in this way, it is so very much like the biblical wildernesses that we read about in the Bible. The Bible mentions going into the wilderness almost 300 times. It's something that happens frequently in the Bible. They're not going off into lush forests. They're not going off to raging rivers. They're not going off to shorelines where waves are crashing or tall mountain peaks. They're going into desolate areas. Desolate areas where they can hear the voice of God. In an article I read by Rabbi Sacks, he says, "Only in the emptiness of the wilderness is the eye subordinate to the ear. Only in the silence of the desert can the sound beneath the sound be heard." The sound beneath the sound. The biblical wilderness is where the prophets went to hear the voice of God. The biblical wilderness is where in the first couple of centuries following of the early church, where the desert mothers and fathers went out into the desert, living in caves, and practiced the arts of contemplation and meditation and retreat that have become a part of our spiritual traditions. The biblical wilderness was a place to go to connect with God. When I was 18 years old, I had an experience on Mauna Loa that was akin to a biblical wilderness experience to me. I'd been there with four friends. We were each about to go our separate ways to go off to college. This was our last big thing to do together. We had climbed one day up to 10,000 feet to Red Hill, a cinder cone where there's a cabin. Spent the night there, climbed the next day up to the summit, Mokuaveoveo Crater. Spent the night in a cabin there, middle of the summer. So cold, so very cold. Stars so bright, headaches so intense. Came back down, spent another night there at Red Hill. And that night, four of us, one was already asleep, felt a presence amongst us that was intense. It was intense in a fear and trembling, scary way. We had no idea other than, oh my gosh, have we done something to disturb the spirits on the mountain, because it felt like it was coming at us and coming for us. I thought, oh my gosh, I had cooked rice that night and I had taken the last of rice and I threw it outside, and I thought, oh my gosh, I've desecrated the mountain. I've got to go out and I've got to pick out every single grain of rice at this point. And my friends would not. They barred the door. Don't go out. It was that intense. And I spent that night in prayer and fear, as did my friends. And then in the morning, I got up as I saw the first amount of light, and I walked up to the top of Red Hill, the cinder cone that was right there, and I saw before me a most glorious and amazing scene. Because from there, you can look out, and on a clear day, you can see the Hilo and beyond, and you can see the sun rising in the east, and it was one of the most magnificent and beautiful sunrises I'd ever seen in my life. And I realized at that moment that the fear and trembling of the night before had merely been the exposure to that which was unknown and that which was mysterious. And when that happens, we oftentimes shake in awe and fear. Thus, when the Bible says the fear of the Lord, they speak so often of awe, but it is also a quaking fear until you realize it's just the presence of God in such power. And when you can take a deep breath, it's no longer fearful, but utterly beautiful. That was when I was 18, and that moment has shaped my life in many ways. Understanding that when we seek after the presence of God, we best be ready, because it's going to come at us. But we need not fear it. In fact, it is beautiful, but it will be different than what we expect. And so when I hear Isaiah today, when I hear Mark hearkening to Isaiah, I have to make sure I put on my Isaiah biblical witness ears, that I put on my Mauna Loa ears, not my modern ears that say wilderness, green, verdant, mountains, forests. No, desolate, barren, where the presence of God can hit us in ways that we will not expect. The wilderness experience in the Bible is typically an isolated experience. Moses goes out into the wilderness of Mount Sinai, and there it is that Moses sees a bush that is burning that will not be consumed. Elijah leaves the people and goes out into the wilderness and lives in the cave, and there it is, he hears a still small voice. John the Baptist leaves community in Jerusalem and other places and goes out in the wilderness of the River Jordan, and there begins to live his world of camel shirts and locusts and honey, grasshoppers. The wilderness is like that. It is a place typically of deprivation in the Bible. John the Baptist and his grasshoppers and honey. Jesus fasting for 40 days. The wilderness is a place that is a journey away. You have to leave your community to go to the place. But like that experience that I had on Mauna Loa, the wilderness is a place where people go to encounter with the divine. Historian Eric Vogel says, when the world has become a desert, a person is at last in the solitude in which they can hear thunderingly the voice of the Spirit that with its urgent whispering has already heard and rescued them. That in the silence of that place, we hear thunderingly that voice that says, you have been heard and you are rescued. Yet Isaiah, in this wilderness that he speaks of, that is usually an experience that an individual has, an experience of isolation and going away, says, hello, we're about to build a road into the wilderness. We're about to build a road into the wilderness. The divine encounter, which has been that of those who have the time and energy and space to go out into the wilderness, is about to become accessible to all of us. That's what we're talking about when a highway is being called for into the wilderness. The crooked path is about to become straight. The mountains that are high are coming down. The valleys that are low are coming up. The rough plains are being made smooth. We are making it possible for all, not just a few, but for all, to experience, to find accessible the Spirit of God. Isaiah is speaking obviously metaphorically, because I don't want him taking down the tops of mountains. I don't want him filling up rivers and everything else. We'll appreciate the metaphor for what it is. What he is saying is, get ready. It is about to become accessible. The Word of God never fades away and is about to be present with you in ways you cannot imagine. This is big news. Gospel means good news. This is the good news. This is that thing that we celebrate. God is present. God is accessible. God is no longer that which is this distant presence out there. God is no longer that which is the purview of the few. God is about to be present with all of us, and that's what we celebrate 2 weeks from tomorrow on Christmas Day. God's presence, God's incarnation in the flesh with us. There are many folks that say that the most essential day of the Christian faith is Easter, the day we celebrate that God can conquer over death, that life has power greater than that of death. It's an important day. There are others, like the Franciscans, that will say, well, perhaps the most important day is not Easter, but is in fact the day of incarnation, Christmas Day, the day in which we celebrate not the conquering of death, but the utter birth into our lives of the cosmic Christ that has been with us from the very beginning of time and is now present, accessible to all of us. This is good news. This is the news that in the midst of all the craziness that makes up this holiday season, this is what makes that a holy day. This is the good news that we need to be so fully aware of, that Christ, God, has come, is present with us. But there's a highway going into the wilderness that is making this possible. And I have to tell you, I'm a little bit worried about that highway. Not because of the mountains coming down, that's a whole nother sermon. What I'm worried about with the highway is that when you make things too easy, that which you are celebrating becomes ho-hum. If we make it so easy that no longer do we have to go out days into the wilderness to find the voice of God, but there's a highway that will take us there, does it become very easy to just take that for granted? If any of you have read Edward Abbey's book, Desert Solitaire, it's an amazing book that was written in the 60s about his experience in the 50s as a young man when he worked as a ranger at Arches National Monument, had not yet become a national park at that time. And his job as a ranger was to go out to the arches that were the furthest away from where the road ended and to be there to take care of the area, to facilitate anyone who was coming out there to see those arches. It was a journey for anyone to get out to those arches. They had to walk days through the desert. There was no road. It was difficult. And in that difficulty, Edward Abbey realized in that difficulty, he's right over here. We're good. He's got mom. in that difficulty, Edward Abbey realized was the beauty of the place. And while he was there in the 50s, he heard the plans that were being made for a road, literally a highway in the desert, that was going to be built there so that many more people could come to see these magnificent arches in the desert. And what Edward Abbey writes about in his book is he predicts, and he is right in so many ways, that what's going to happen the moment that we make these places accessible to all is you're just going to have people that are just coming and they're going to bag national parks. Today I did Arches, tomorrow I do Zion, then I will do Bryce, then I will do the Tetons, and day after day I'll do this. And these amazing places that touch our spirits are just going to become visual postcards that we take and move on. That along with that will come concessions, along with that will come trash. And he was right. In so many ways, that has happened. And Edward Abbey, I'm sure, is saddened by that reality. But here's the truth. That just because it's made easier does not mean that one needs to take it for granted. My life has been changed by climbing Mauna Loa. I am so grateful that there is a road from Hilo to Volcano National Park. I am so grateful that there are people years before me that built a trail that goes all the way up to the summit of Mauna Loa that I could follow, that built a cabin at 10,000 feet, at 13,000 feet that I could rest my weary bones at. I am so grateful for that because it has given me the opportunity to experience that which might otherwise have been utterly inaccessible. But I don't take those experiences lightly. I prepare physically, I prepare spiritually for the opportunity to climb a place like Mauna Loa. When Kirsten and I had the gift a number of years ago to Italy, I read before we went and while we were there, the agony and the ecstasy, so I could understand Michelangelo and all the places that we were going to be. When we were in southern Spain a few years ago, I read about, we shared together a book that was about that glorious period from about 1100 to 1400 where Jews and Christians and Muslims were actually coexisting in southern Spain in ways that have not happened before or since. We head off to New Zealand in 2 weeks and 2 days. Excited? Just a little. And I just downloaded the book Whale Rider. Some of you may have seen that movie. I can't wait to read it. And I just downloaded this book that has the best title of any book in the world. Come to the Shore and We Will Eat You. We Will Kill You and Eat You. And it's a story that traces the history of Western interaction with the Maori culture. Going to these places, I understand, is a chance for my soul to be made alive. But I go there in preparation. I prepare before I go. That's what Advent is for us in our life. These 4 weeks are our opportunity to ensure that on Christmas Day, it's not a ho-hum moment. What a terrible metaphor for our life would it be if what Edward Abbey says in desert solitaire about the national parks becomes the way that we celebrate this special day. Ho-hum, just another day. Oh, look in the newspaper, good sales tomorrow. How exciting. This is the day that shapes our faith. And we have this gift of these 4 weeks beforehand to prepare ourselves so that that which has become accessible, we can appreciate. That's why there are Advent devotionals. That's why if you go online right now, you can find one person after another that's sharing Advent thoughts. That's why it's a time for prayer. It's a time for interaction. It is a time to sort ourselves and settle ourselves that we might not just become aware of a great story, but that we might know that story within our spirit, within our soul. Comfort my people, Isaiah says. A road is being cut into the wilderness. God is going to become present in ways you cannot even imagine. This is good news. This is our gift. Our opportunity is to make sure in the days that lead up to that moment that we celebrate that gift, we have prepared ourselves as well. Amen.